going to briefly talk about some bad news and some good news about nutrition. The first bad news has to do with dilution effects that occur in our high yield crops. It turns out that in our quest for getting high yield crops, that tends to dilute the nutrient concentration in these foods. The second thing I'm going to talk about is evidence that conventional farming reduces the concentration of phytochemicals in foods. Phytochemicals being different from nutrients in that they are not essential, but they are still beneficial to us. And finally, I'm going to talk about what consumers and what we as a society can do about some of these things. The first issue of dilution effects is really an old message, well known to experts in agriculture, but unwelcome to them and not advertised by them, and surprisingly unknown in the nutrition community. I was in nutrition for over 30 years and did not hear about it until I had a paper in review in 2004. One of the reviewers pointed this out to me, and I found the literature on it. But it's surprisingly unknown to nutritionists and the public in general. The second subject, loss of phytochemicals. This is a relatively new emerging field of evidence. We've only known about these beneficial substances being important to us for about 15 years, and the evidence that there's a difference between organic and non-organic is somewhat preliminary for that reason. The things that we can do about these effects is really a very old message, but one that is not welcome to the public and has not been followed very much. But now there's increasing reason to do so, and maybe we can have better success in getting people to improve their diets. There are three kinds of evidence for these dilution effects that I'm going to highlight for you. The first is an inverse relation between crop yield and nutrient concentration. The evidence for this began accumulating in the 1940s. It is well known to horticulturists and agronomists as the dilution effect. The second kind of evidence is relatively recent studies, three of them, first one published in 1997, comparing historical data on the nutrient content of foods, usually about 50 years apart, and finding apparent declines in the amount of minerals, vitamins, and protein in the new versus the old data. And the third kind of evidence that I'm going to present is rather new also, inverse relationships between yield and nutrient concentration that have been found in side-by-side plantings of old versus new varieties, high-yield versus low-yield varieties, planted side-by-side and measured, finding declines in the newer varieties. This is really a new kind of genetic of dilution effect, which is a genetic dilution effect, unlike the earlier discovered forms, which were environmental. I'll mention that again. Now, the first evidence that I'm going to review is the inverse relations between crop yield and mineral concentrations. This was reviewed in 1981 in a major review, 28 pages long, 101 references going back to the 1940s. It has been cited 177 times since then, but this is really only the tip of the iceberg, because most literature mentions of the dilution effect do not give any reference at all, as if it is just simply common knowledge among agricultural scientists. In this review, they are talking about yields that have been increased by fertilization and irrigation primarily, and therefore these are what I have called environmental dilution effects, in order to distinguish them from the more recently discovered genetic dilution effects. Here is an example of an article that was cited in that review. This is an experiment in red raspberry plants where they planted them in soil that contained 12 parts per million of phosphorus, and they added 0, 22, or 44 parts per million of phosphorus to the soil, let them grow for a few months, and then measured the concentration of all of these minerals in the plants. And here I'm showing you the relative concentration, for example, relative to 1 for the no fertilization plant. When you got to 44, the highest concentration of fertilization, it has increased the amount of phosphorus in the plant by about 20%. But notice that the concentration of this amount there, the concentration of each of the other minerals has been decreased, often by more than 20%, and in the case of copper, by more than 50%. Every other mineral has decreased in concentration as a result of adding phosphorus to the soil. And what's going on here is helped explain by the yields that are put down here. This is the yield of dry matter. The relative yields are 1 to 1.4 to 2.2. In other words, at the highest concentration of added phosphorus, we're getting 2.2 times more plant, but you're not getting 2.2 times more of all of the other minerals into the plant, and as a result, you get this diluting effect on all of the other minerals in this case. So that is the dilution effect that is well known to experts and needs to become better known to nutritionists. Our quest for high yield has this undesirable side effect, unintended and undesirable. Now, moving on to the second kind of evidence for dilution effects, this evidence has to do with historical food composition data, 50-year declines approximately. There are three studies. The first one was published by Mayer in 1997 using data from the UK. She looked at 20 vegetables and 20 fruits. The second paper was published by me and co-authors in 2004. We looked at 43 garden crops, which were almost entirely vegetables, using U.S. Department of Agriculture data. And the third one was published a year later by White and Broadley, using UK and US data. I'm going to illustrate these three studies with our study, partly because I'm most familiar with it, and partly because it looked at the most foods, the most nutrients, and also had the most detailed statistical analysis. Our results are shown in this form. I'm plotting here the median ratio of the new nutrient content over the old nutrient content, where this yellow line represents 1, which is no change. All the numbers below the yellow line represent a dilution, and anything above the red line or yellow line represents an increase. Now, for example, in protein, we found that the median ratio, new or old, was 0.94. In other words, the median ratio showed a 6% decline over the 50-year period in protein content in the 43 vegetables that we looked at. The vertical lines represent 95% confidence intervals, and so if this pointer is unpredictable, there it goes. If the 95% confidence interval is below the yellow line, then we say that this decline is statistically significant, and that is true for the six substances that are marked with an orange asterisk, protein, all three the minerals that we could look at, and two of the five vitamins that we could look at. The declines were all statistically significant. Out of the 12 measurements here, 10 of them are decreases. There are two small increases, the median R, but this is a very small amount, and actually the slight increase in carbohydrate here is an expected increase, because if the protein and fat are down, something else has to be up. Something else major has to be up, and it's the carbohydrate. In fact, that's what you always get. In the dilution effect, you get more carbohydrate and less of other things. Now, this is a fairly crude kind of thing to do, I must admit, because we're comparing data from two different eras, 1950s, 1999 publication. There are differences in where the plants were grown, what soil they were grown in, what climate they were in, and so forth. But these variations tend to be randomly up or down, and so we think that by looking at the median of a large number, we get a reasonable estimate of what the median decline is for these 43 foods. But please be aware, the 95% confidence interval here shows the range of uncertainty on the median, and if you look at the range of uncertainty of the individual ratios for all 43 foods, they're much larger than the 95% confidence intervals. In other words, for some of these foods, there are apparent increases, and there are also apparent decreases quite a bit larger than what we see here. So what we're looking at is just a median for each nutrient for all of these foods. Fairly crude kind of thing. Now the third kind of evidence comes from these side-by-side comparisons where the new and old varieties, or the low-yield and the high-yield varieties, are planted side-by-side in the same environment, the same soil, the same irrigation, the same fertilization. Everything is the same. The only thing that's different is the genetic potential of the plant for higher yield versus lower yield. And there are three, I should say first, this is an extremely powerful method because it eliminates all of the uncertainties inherent in comparisons of historical data that I mentioned. There's no potential confounding by variations in soil, environment, sampling, environmental analytical methods. It applies to single foods instead of looking at just the median of a large group of foods. There is unlimited choice of foods and nutrients that you can study, whereas in the historical comparisons, you're limited to the foods and nutrients that were studied 50 years ago. And it also allows testing for proposed remedies of these dilution effects. Now, there are three of these studies. I've shown them here, and they're in your handout. Broccoli, calcium and magnesium tended to go down with yield in broccoli. In wheat, I'm going to show you the details. In the third one, for field corn, maize, 45 commercial cultivars that were commercially planted between 1920 and 2001. These were all planted side by side in Iowa and in California, and they found decreases in protein, decreases in oil, decreases in the three amino acids, and increases in starch. Now I want to show you the details for the wheat study. These were 14 varieties of hard winter wheat that were introduced between 1873 and 1995. Here I'm showing the correlation between the concentration of six minerals and the yield of the crop. And these are negative correlations. In other words, the higher the yield of the crop, the lower the concentration of these nutrients. Some of these correlations are extremely high. Some of them are pretty small and not very significant. Only the largest ones are statistically reliable, but every one of them is negative, pointing in that direction. The authors reported on the average a 16 to 36% decline per 100 years in these six minerals. Okay, now, moving on to the evidence about phytochemicals, limited evidence suggests that there's about a 30% decline in the concentration of these phytochemicals in conventionally grown plants compared to organically grown plants. These are mostly antioxidants, some secondary plant metabolites. This implies probable enhanced disease prevention in organic crops compared to inorganic or conventional crops. Many different diseases probably affected. The evidence for this is in a review that's available on the internet, published by the Organic Center in 2005. The web address is there. Charles Brenbrook is the head scientist of the Organic Center. The 30% figure comes from seven key studies that they reviewed. This is a long review with a long bibliography, and I refer you to that for the details. I'm going to show you one example. This is from a paper that was published a year later, comparing the antioxidants in three organic versus four conventional varieties of strawberry. I'm showing here the ratio of organic to conventional content of these substances. AA is ascorbic acid, vitamin C. DHAA is dehydroascorbic acid, which still counts as vitamin C, but it is a less desirable form because it is partially oxidized, and it is down quite a bit in the conventional. Flavanols, anthocyanins, phenolics, these are groups of many substances, and then a couple of individual ones, ellagic acid and hydroxycinnamic acid. They did, unfortunately, did not give confidence intervals, but they did report statistical significance, which was shown by the three numbers here that have asterisks on them. The others are not statistically reliable, but the indication is that in every case, there is a higher level of these desirable substances in the organic compared to the inorganic strawberries. Now, these authors didn't stop here with just chemical measurements. They went on and studied the effect of extracts from these strawberries on the growth of two different kinds of cancer cells in test tube studies. These are the two different cell lines that they used, and so there's a pair of numbers here for all strawberries for two of the specific varieties that they studied, and in each case the activity against proliferation of cancer cells was something like 20 to 80% higher in the organic extracts compared to the conventional extracts. An interesting thing is that there was no obvious correlation between these results and the previous slide showing the content of these various substances. In other words, we don't really know probably what is in the strawberries that is causing these anti-cancer proliferation effects. So, what to do about dilution effects? I'm counting. You took 5 minutes at the beginning, so
Okay.
Okay. The good news. What can we do about this? Number one is, and this might surprise you, eat more of these fruits and vegetables, in spite of the fact that they don't have as high levels as they used to. They still are our best sources for these substances, and hundreds of studies show that the more of them that we eat, the healthier we are. Another thing that we can do is we can eat less of added sugars, added fats and oils, and refined grains, because these foods, which are man-made foods, they have all lost much more broadly and deeply of both nutrients and phytochemicals than anything we're talking about in as dilution effects. Believe it or not, Americans consume most of their calories in these forms: added sugar, added fats and oils, white flour and white rice, about 60% of the calories. This represents a giant cookie of about 1,500 calories a day on the average that people eat in this country. And nutritionists and grandmothers have been trying for years to get people to eat less of these things, but they taste good, and it is a message that is hard to get people to act on. Now, longer range, we as a society, as an, and as scientists, we can reevaluate our single-minded focus on yield and reorient toward trying to overcome these dilution effects and trying to overcome the deleterious effects of conventional agriculture on phytochemicals. This is a major long-range project that's going to take a lot of time, whereas the first two things are things that you can do today, right now, to increase your intake of nutrients and phytochemicals. The possible approaches involve plant breeding, using older varieties that are lower in yield, and possibly organic methods can be used to overcome some of these dilution effects, and they certainly can be used to overcome the losses of phytochemicals. What to do about phytochemicals? We can consider organic fruits and vegetables based on the preliminary evidence that we have. We can hope for lower costs, better availability, and increasing evidence that this is really beneficial. As I mentioned, the evidence right now is pretty limited. We can also keep in mind that the argument for organic goes much beyond nutrients and phytochemicals. Another thing that we can do, and this was emphasized in that report from the Organic Center that I cited, we can emphasize fruits and vegetables, whether they're organic or not, that are particularly high in these phytochemicals. And one of the guides that people can use is intense color. Things like blueberries and plums and dark greens, broccoli and so forth, these intense colors tend to correlate with high levels of nutrients and high levels of phytochemicals. It can even be true for chocolate. Dark chocolate is high in certain ones. White chocolate doesn't have any. It's true for brown flour versus white flour and brown rice versus white rice. The color refers to nutrients and phytochemicals. We can also emphasize fresh over frozen and dried because there are losses that occur, especially in drying and cooking. By the way, this color thing doesn't work very well always for things like garlic and tea and even white potatoes and onions. These are also good sources of phytochemicals. We can eat whole grains, nuts, and beans. These are all good sources of phytochemicals. Much better, obviously, than the refined foods that I talked about. So, to summarize, the evidence for dilution effect, the diluting effect of yield, is the environmental dilution effect for fertilization and irrigation discovered a long time ago. The historical studies give some new information relevant to consumers about how much these declines might be for different nutrients. And then finally, the genetic dilution effects that have been recently discovered dramatically verify a new kind of dilution effect based on genetics of planting. Conventional farming probably reduces phytochemical concentrations. Limited evidence points in that direction. And what we can do about these things right now is to eat more whole foods and less of the refined foods that have lost large amounts, much larger than what is caused by dilution effects. In long run, what we can do is try to reverse these effects by returning to a more natural kind of agriculture. And this is my email address if you'd like for me to send you any of these articles. And I'd like to point out I have submitted to Hort Science this article, which gives you much more detailed evidence than what I've been able to review here in a short time. So thank you for your attention.